Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Wednesday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. The Lakers are chasing the Sacramento Kings in the standings. That's where they are tonight. And could we get some advice on how the Lakers can get out of their hole from an actual Kings expert? That's next on Locked On Lakers.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, no matter how or where you get your podcasts. Always free, never behind a paywall. And Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you go to see the show. And if you are seeing it today, if it's not already your second listen, you can look at Matt George, host of Locked On Kings, one of the best shows on the network. Really enjoy that one. And one that you should be watching and listening to, particularly on a day like today, because the Kings are hosting the Lakers Wednesday night. The Lakers chasing the Kings in the standings, an unfamiliar place, generally speaking, for the Lakers. Even when they're bad, they are still usually ahead of the Kings. Matt, welcome. Thanks so much for coming on.
Hey, it's a pleasure. All is right in the world. The Sacramento Kings ahead of the Los Angeles Lakers in the standings. And this time it's not fluky, I think, but still a lot of season to go. And we'll see how it all plays out. But I always enjoy Lakers and Kings inside of the Golden 1 Center here in Sacramento, because it's one of the closest things you get to like a college type atmosphere in the NBA, because so many Lakers fans always show up. And I mean, Kings fans hate the environment. They hate seeing a lot of Laker yellow in the Golden 1 Center. I think it lends for a really interesting and fun game. I've always enjoyed it. So I have these two games every year circled on my calendar.
Real quick, want to let people know that this episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. As the world's largest therapy service, BetterHelp has matched 3 million people with professionally licensed and vetted therapists, available 100% online. Learn more and save 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/lockedonNBA. Okay, tell me, where do you think this is going to happen? Because Andy and I had a little mini debate about this on the show for Tuesday. How many Lakers fans, like, are Kings fans going to be able to buy up some more tickets? Like, will it be a big Lakers crowd? Because it often is, but that's often because I would imagine Lakers, like Kings tickets are easy to get. Like this, will it be the same atmosphere as it usually is on Wednesday?
Well, there are four Kings games every single year that are twice as expensive as every other one. And that's when the Lakers come to town, and that's when the Golden State Warriors come to town. And I can tell you a lot of Sacramento Kings use that as a business decision to make some of the money back that they paid for season tickets off of Laker fans who are willing to drop more money just to see their team come to Sacramento. Typically, it's Lakers fans coming into the Golden 1 Center expecting to see LeBron, AD, and company, or Kobe in the good old days, like just dunk on the Kings, and it was a fun night out. Now it's a little bit different with the Lakers coming in actually with something to prove. So Kings tickets are – I don't know if I would consider them easy to get for these four games in particular, the Lakers and Warriors games. Definitely you have to put your money where your mouth is a little bit to get in the building. And there are definitely games every single year that I get too many phone calls and texts from friends from high school or family that always want to go and see the Lakers and Kings or Warriors and Kings for some reason. It's a difficult ticket to get compared to the rest of the season.
So there's still going to be a lot of Laker jerseys in this game this year.
Absolutely.
I told you, dummy.
For the record, Andy was right. I was wrong. There will be a gigantic Laker contingent there. I was trying to pump up the Kings because like they're good this year. And like I think legitimately so. I mean, would you agree? I mean, like, I think this team is legit.
They're absolutely legit. And it's usually around, I would say, like a 60-40 to 65-35 split of Kings to Lakers fans. And not too long ago, a number of years ago, you could say it was pretty close to 50-50. But yeah, the Kings are absolutely legit. Like a lot of people say it's like the 30 games into the season test, or regardless. To me, it's, are the Sacramento Kings, is the success that they're having, is that sustainable? Are they doing things that are like a flash in the pan? Go back to like the 2018 season when they started the season really, really good because they were playing with a ridiculously fast tempo and taking advantage of teams that weren't kind of up to that level of fitness yet. Well, once teams got to that level of fitness and also started forcing the Kings in the half court, everything fell apart. And we could see that coming from a mile away. This Kings team is like, okay, they're winning as a group. They're winning by running through Domantas Sabonis, and it's sustainable. They're shooting. I mean, some players started the season like Kevin Huerter shooting 50%. We knew that aspect wasn't sustainable, but the Sacramento Kings had more than enough shooters on this team to surround De'Aaron Fox and Domantas Sabonis with. So, like, this Kings team is definitely legit this year. They are, I think, better than we expected this early on. And any win that they have over the Lakers or any win that they have on the road or at home is far from fluky at this point.
Yeah, the Lakers and Kings played on November 11th. The Kings won 120 to 114. There was no LeBron in that game, but now there's no AD, likely no Austin Reeves, possibly no Russell Westbrook, so it's not like they're in better shape. And the Kings at the time of that win were 5-6. They've since gone 11-7. What has worked for them over that period where they've solidified themselves as real? And then after that, how do you picture them trying to capitalize specifically on a team without Anthony Davis?
Well, two things that they've figured out. Number one is Mike Brown has solidified his rotation. Now, since adjustments have been made, there now is a new question mark to the rotation, which we'll get into a little bit later on. But the rotation is set and it's consistent and guys know their roles and they've bought into their roles. So Malik Monk comes in off the bench, and Andy, you and I discussed this at length on Locked On Kings recently. Malik comes in and he plays that Energizer Bunny role, who also has shown off a passing ability that a lot of people didn't necessarily know he had to his game. The Kings lean heavily on in that second unit. You look at him as a microwave scorer, but also a microwave facilitator. De'Aaron Fox is not having to score 35, 40 points a night for this team to win. He can get away with nights where he just has 24. Hell, he's gotten away with nights where he has 16, 17, or 18, as long as he's also distributing. Everything runs through Domantas Sabonis. He really is the foundation and anchor of what they do on both ends of the floor, and the Kings have found a way to maximize that. And Domantas is now starting to actually be a little more aggressive himself and look for his shot a little bit more. His shot attempts are slowly starting to go up while the efficient shooting is staying kind of even keel around that 60% mark. So, I mean, the Kings are just figuring out how to play together, and they're not relying on massive individual performances or outlier numbers in order to consistently keep winning. And one thing to always keep an eye out for is if the Kings get six or seven players in double figure scoring, they're almost guaranteed to win the game. The Kings are a team that wins as a team. De'Aaron Fox scored 37 points last night. He's capable of doing that any night, but the Kings lost in that game. Now, De'Aaron could go and score 37 or 40 points against the Lakers. I would say when he's dropping those kind of numbers, the Kings should probably be winning. But it's not like De'Aaron is averaging 30 and Domantas Sabonis is averaging 28, and that's why this team is winning. They're getting input from multiple different players, double-figure scoring from basically their entire starting lineup plus three or four guys off of the bench given the night. And that makes them a very difficult team to match up against. And then defensively, if they can just tread water, which is sometimes a tough ask for them, but if they can just tread water, they're good enough offensively to win and to figure it out. Now, to take advantage of a team without Anthony Davis, I think that's a huge benefit for the Kings in the sense that when the Kings are in the most trouble, it's when Domantas Sabonis is in foul trouble. So to not have to worry about a presence like Anthony Davis on the inside who can draw a lot of fouls and get Domantas Sabonis in foul trouble, that allows Kings fans to relieve a little bit of stress. However, coming into this game, we just found out today, Domantas Sabonis is listed as questionable, as is Harrison Barnes. And the Kings can't survive a long period of time without De'Aaron Fox, but they can make do. And they did that during the road trip to some extent. The Kings cannot make do without Domantas Sabonis. He is everything to that team. He doesn't necessarily have to be the best player or superstar player on the team to be the centerpiece of that team. So if Sabonis doesn't play, the Lakers should feel pretty good about
that. I think they should test that theory against the Lakers and just have some, you know, really, if they want to prove what they are as a team and that they're not reliant on this guy, they should make a point of playing without Sabonis. Right. You know what? Throw in Barnes too.
I think they don't want to prove that, though. They're happy to prove that, yes, everything Domantas Sabonis does is necessary, and they never want to lose him again. And they've done a really good job to this point staying healthy. So knock on wood, he's ready to go. And you guys
cover
the best.
We cover a team that really knows what it means to be respected, Matt, and have respect over the years. This is how you get respect. I'm just saying, if this is the thing that, you know, the Kings as a team and the fan base wants, again, roll the dice without Sabonis.
I will take a disrespected 17-13 over a respected 16-14.
Smart man.
Thank you very much.
Very smart
man. I will say I am probably more keenly aware of both the play of not just Harrison Barnes, but Domantas Sabonis than most fans in LA, because I have them both on my fantasy team. So, and I have really enjoyed the experience. Like the first couple of games, I was like, ooh, did I overdraft Sabonis? And the last like 15, I have been like, no, I have not. No, he has been insanely good. So
leads the NBA in double doubles, had 24 rebounds, I think, last night. You're a smart GM.
Yeah, no, I know what I'm doing. So Mike Brown is another thread. You mentioned Malik Monk earlier. Mike Brown, another thread that unites the Kings and the Lakers. Curious what you think about the work he's done, because Andy and I covered Mike Brown when he was in LA and loved the guy. The experience didn't go so smoothly, though. So we'll talk Mike Brown, and we'll talk Western Conference trade deadlines next.
Locked On Lakers and Locked On Kings, both brought to you by BetterHelp. Unfortunately, life does not come with a user manual, and when it's not working for you, it's normal to feel stuck. Navigating life's challenges, whether professional or emotional, can bring on anxiety, uncertainty, whether it's a career change, a new relationship, becoming a parent, moving, all sorts of stuff. And I can personally speak to how much therapy has helped me during a very difficult period in my life, for me and my family. Sitting down, talking with a professional, it was huge. And BetterHelp has over 3 million people. They've connected over 3 million people with licensed therapists. It's convenient, accessible anywhere, 100% online, no waiting rooms, no traffic. Plus, it's affordable. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to match with a therapist. And if things aren't clicking, you can just easily switch to another therapist anytime. Learn more, save 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/lockedonNBA. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lockedonNBA.
All right, so Andy, tell me if you think I'm describing this wrong. Mike Brown, when you know we got to know him, covering him, first and foremost, one of the just nicest humans that you'll find in the NBA. Really,
yes,
great person to be around, great person to talk to. The experience of Brown as a coach, though, I always just felt like it was too much. Practices were too long. The amount of, you know, detail that went into everything was too heavy. Everything was, especially on a veteran team like the Lakers really had there. He needed to be a little bit more trusting, a little bit more casual, a little less more. What is he like in Sacramento? Has the time away from the head coaching gig, working with Steve Kerr in Golden State, is he a different guy now?
The thing that out of all those things that is most the same is that his practices still go very long. as someone who has had to sit there, arrive at noon for a media availability and not start talking to players till 1:15 or 1:30.
Yeah. You bring a book and a lunch to his practices.
Yes. But I mean, Mike Brown is a breath of fresh air. He's a breath of fresh air, not just for a team that has struggled, but for an organization that's been in the pits for so long. Like he comes in and when in his introductory press conference, he preached about the soul of an organization. He talked about what you need to have for like he puts his or he practices what he preaches. And what I love about Mike Brown is the like how important he is and how important he knows that he is, but how little he lets that affect what he does. Like he's assembled a staff here in Sacramento that's extremely important, and they've all done amazing work individually to help make this team better. And Mike directs the attention towards them as much as possible with how Luke Lout has helped De'Aaron Fox's jumper, what Doug Christie does with Domantas Sabonis, what Leandro Barbosa brings to the team, what Jay Triano brings, Jordy Tony Fernandez, his lead assistant. We saw Jordy get his first win after Coach Brown was ejected. I think that was the Chicago game. Toronto game. And afterwards, Brown is part of the celebration, lets Jordy make the speech and lets Jordy have the moment. So like that's just who Mike Brown is. But also, he's a coach. He comes in and he coaches. He teaches. And the Sacramento Kings, even if they're not necessarily a young team, they have players like De'Aaron Fox who are entering their prime, who haven't really been coached to the point of their career to where he has the respect, where he can pull them aside and say, hey, I need this out of you. This was good. It needs to be better. And more importantly, he has the reputation and the respect, just being the nice guy and amazing guy that he is, that they listen and they absorb that and they respond to that. So, it's a combination of a lot of things: his personality, his basketball IQ, the coaching staff he's assembled, his selfishness or selflessness that has really provided a change to Kings culture that has also had a positive effect on their win totals.
He's got a strong eyeglass game too. When we were covering him, he had an Oakley deal, and every single game or practice, he had a different pair of eyes. He was basically like the PJ Tucker of eyeglasses. it was pretty amazing. The defense at this point has not caught up with the offense in terms of its efficiency, the effectiveness. How much of that do you think is what's still left to learn, I guess, with this team, what they're still figuring out, versus on paper, they don't necessarily have a lot of great defenders, and there's just a ceiling in terms of what you can get from them?
I think it's personnel based in some ways, for sure. Like, the Sacramento Kings aren't a roster loaded with guys who are known for their defense. We've seen individual defensive improvement. De'Aaron Fox has bought in significantly on the defensive end of the floor and has actually become the Kings' fourth quarter stopper. Everybody talks about him leading the league with the clutch shooting percentage. And he's been great offensively in the fourth quarter, but the Kings have stuck De'Aaron Fox on Tyler Hero when he was going off in Sacramento. When Steph Curry was going off against the Kings in Sacramento and the Kings won that game, De'Aaron Fox actually locked up Curry a couple times, including blocking a big shot in the corner that led to a Kings run, and they eventually won that game. De'Aaron Fox was on LaMelo Ball last night in the fourth quarter, played some decent defense, also had some breakdowns that led to a interaction between the two of us on social media. But like, there are people or players that are definitely improving, but still, we knew that this Kings team, first and foremost, had to establish a foundation. Like, it wasn't just like, okay, they have something, let's build upon it. They had nothing defensively. We're talking one of the worst defenses of all time, and a lot of new players who are coming in to try and fix that. But players like Kevin Huerter or Malik Monk, who aren't necessarily known for defense. So Mike really had to build from the ground up with nothing but like a hammer and a box of nails. And he's done a good job to get this team to recognize that if they offensively put themselves in position where they just need a little bit of defense in order to win that night, they can win those battles. They can win those battles. They don't necessarily have to worry about the war. So that's kind of where Mike Brown is at defensively with this team.
Yeah, you talk about games. Like, I as a, you know, an observer of sports for a while now, and like, you know, when you sort of, as a coach, as well, I would always prefer that the team I'm about to play isn't coming off a terrible loss. Do you think it matters? Like, for context, the Kings lost to Charlotte. That was a home game too, right? That was on Monday night. And I normally would say, you don't want to just, you know, the team gets angry. They got, you know, they're a little more focused and locked in. The next one, you want a team to be kind of fat and happy and lazy and whatever. Does that even apply though to a Laker game? Like, given that it's the Lakers coming into Sacramento, had they won against Charlotte, would there be any space, like let down space, whatever? Does any of that make a difference?
I don't intend this to be disrespectful. I don't think the Lakers have that prestige that say the Warriors do now. And I think it's just because of the standing situation. Now, I don't think the Kings should walk.
Can I stop you for a second? You may not have intended for that to be disrespectful, but it was disrespectful.
Sorry, Laker fans. I'm not. I don't care. The Kings are better than you for the first time to deal with.
So you don't care.
My point is, the Kings should not come into the game against the Los Angeles Lakers saying we're better in the standings, therefore we're better in this game. And I think Mike Brown has done a really good job getting them to get rid of that mindset period. When that was a, that was something we used to be terrified in Sacramento, and for good reason. When a team was missing their best player or one of their best players, it was almost guaranteed to be a loss for the Kings, because they just, they would walk in with some kind of unearned swagger, or not take maybe someone off the bench, the sixth man who now is a starter off the bench, seriously. And that sixth man would go for 30, and everybody came into the game against the Sacramento Kings expecting to get theirs, because they knew the Kings don't know the definition of defense, let alone how to play it. So I don't think the Kings are going to get up for this game against the Lakers like maybe they would get up for a game against the Warriors. At this point, I don't think they really care who their opponent is, truthfully. But I do think they definitely care about losing a game that they should have had at home, and recognizing the importance of these games towards building a safety net for later on in the season when good teams really start to figure it out and go all out for playoff seeding. They recognize the importance of that and know that the games at home, regardless of their opponent, are games that they should handle. So I definitely expect to see a refocused Kings team. But again, with the questions about who's available and who's not, there are certain injuries that this team, even if they're focused, is going to have a really hard time overcoming. So that is to be determined.
Yeah, I do hope both teams have as full a roster as possible, because this does have the potential to be a fun game. Although I got to say, Andy, I'm sure you agree, when a 13-17, they got that, Lakers got that 13-17 swagger. So, you know, you best take them seriously. Both of us want to talk about the West, because it is a fascinating conference right now, especially given the Warriors state, and, you know, the Kings are good, and the Pelicans are really good, and the Jazz are hanging in there, and they're good, and
tons. The Lakers have lost shockingly little ground, though, in all of this time.
Yes, below 500. Because there is so much parity right now, which means the trade deadline is going to potentially be very hard to predict. And so we got some questions about that, and want your perspective, Matt, on what you would do were you the Lakers, given their current circumstances. So all that coming next.
Locked On Lakers and Locked On Kings, both brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline.net, your number one source for sports betting info, stats, news, and analysis. Get the latest odds and trends for every professional and amateur league out there, from football to basketball to soccer to esports. They've got it all over at BetOnline.net. And if you love sports podcasts, which of course you do, you are listening to a combination of two of them right now, you can find those at BetOnline as well. They've got content over at BetOnline, and it's always the fastest, easiest way to get your betting fix. So head to the website today or use your mobile device. Learn more about the trends in action. BetOnline, where the game starts.
So do you expect the Kings, you know, let's say they can keep doing, you know, kind of hanging out where they are, the currently, they'll enter Monday's game sixth in the conference. So in what we call the real playoffs and not the play-in, do you expect them to be buyers potentially? Because as Andy mentioned, like, that changes the calculus for like what you have to pay to get a Bogdanovich or something like that from Detroit.
I expect them to be smart, and that's not a cop-out answer as much as it is a Monty McNair general manager mindset. Like, Monty has adopted this, basically, I mean, like the subtitle on his business card, which is like, we are going to remain flexible. We are going to look at every opportunity to improve our team, or how we believe we're going to improve our team, but we're not going to do or take the routes that are necessarily conventional, or what everybody thinks is the right route to go, or always be targeting the players that everybody thinks the Kings should be targeting necessarily. Monty's kind of lived up to that throughout the course of his short tenure here as the Kings general manager. I think it's far more likely for the Kings to be buyers than sellers, that's for sure. But I think the Kings have to be very careful with what they're trying to buy and what's a good bargain versus an overpay. And what I mean by that is, like, the Kings right now are desperately searching for a backup big, a backup center in particular. There's a reason why Domantas Sabonis has played 40 minutes a game over the last like three or four games, because they don't have another option at this point in time. So backup bigs might be something on the cheap that the Sacramento Kings can get. But I know, like, a major conversation here in Sacramento is Harrison Barnes is on an expiring deal. Did the Sacramento Kings try and move Harrison Barnes, and his value is not as good now as it was last year or the year before the trade deadline, and Monty should have pulled the trigger then? I would be very hesitant if I were Monty to trade Harrison Barnes, not just because of the consistent presence as a wing that he is for the Kings starting lineup, but how important he is to the Kings locker room. And this is a team that I think is vulnerable to any significant change to their chemistry or their starting lineup, I think can have a catastrophic impact on the way that the team is playing. And again, you go back to 2018 when the Kings actually acquired Harrison Barnes. That was the year they traded Iman Shumpert, which people might roll their eyes at, but Iman Shumpert was so much the lifeblood of that Kings locker room. It completely changed how the Kings played basketball and the way the Kings traded or played basketball just by making that trade and the impact that that had off of the floor. So I think Monty is aware of that. I think he has to be careful not to swing too hard and recognize this team is trending upward now. But if there is something there for them to improve enough to maybe have a chance at securing a sixth seed versus being a play-in team, he's definitely going to be fielding calls.
Well, Damian Jones, by the way, if you're looking for a backup center, he's available.
A first rounder, I mean, something like that. You got that's a Damian Jones.
You can even throw in some protections.
He already knows the system. He knows where he knows how to find the arena. He knows it's like it's a match made in heaven.
Yes. Well, you got a Target coupon and maybe the rights to a European player that the Kings drafted in 2013 that still hasn't come over. That's what you get.
You mentioned the idea that Monty McNair is going to look to be, I guess, controlled aggressive, maybe would be the way to put this. When you think about needs for this team and maybe like, everybody knows the players the Lakers have been linked to, you know, a lot of shooting, a lot of wings, or whatever star might be disgruntled, you know, pick a bull right now, for example. Do you picture the Kings potentially being a team that the Lakers would specifically bid against for some of the type of players they want? Or do you picture them, I guess, sort of operating in different circles in terms of the deals that they're looking to make? Because so obviously affects the Lakers.
Yeah, my gut reaction is that they would operate in different circles. And the reason why is because the Kings are in a position where if they're going for a home run type trade, which I don't think is off the table, they're limited in what assets they can send in that trade because of the Kevin Huerter trade. So that kind of locks up their draft situation. And I don't know if Monty is willing to throw multiple years of protected or unprotected first round picks in addition to a player as important as Harrison Barnes, plus add in a Rashawn Holmes who has as low a value as he's ever had right now because of his contract situation. Like, I don't really know what that gets you in the realm of the savior that the Los Angeles Lakers are necessarily hoping for. So I don't know what deal is out there that I think the Lakers would be interested in that the Kings also would have a chance in at this point in time. Just because I don't think that each team is looking for the same thing. I think the Kings are looking for a piece to add to what they're doing right that continues that move forward. I think the Lakers are looking for someone to please God revive what they're trying to do there. The Kings aren't in that desperation mode at this point in time. So in that sense, I would say they're in a different circle.
And that's, I think, encouraging. The Lakers, as you know, don't have a whole lot of things to bid with. So the fewer people, like the idea that you need, Andy and I could do a week's worth of shows on Bradley Beal and just why this is representative of everything that's sort of wrong about the way the Lakers think. But you, Matt, you've been around the Kings for a very long time. And to your credit, you still seem like an optimistic human, somebody who looks forward to getting up every day and greets the world with a smile. When you look at the Lakers and, you know, you see a team that's in a hole, you've been around teams that have been in holes. What would you do if you were them? Would you, you know, make a big swing with the couple picks that they have left? Like, do you see a team that is a couple good depth players, Buddy Hield, Miles Turner, whatever, from being legitimate?
In my mind, as long as you have LeBron James on your squad, you'll always have a chance, even if LeBron is getting older and older. But that's just a belief that I've had forever, regardless of what jersey he's wearing, what color he's wearing, or what logo's on his shirt. That being said, based off of my understanding of the Lakers situation, they're in salary cap hell. And I'm not smart enough to know how in the world to work their way out of that situation.
I'm concerned neither are the people running the organization. Yeah,
because there might not be a way out. Like, they've put themselves in an absolute dump. But here's one thing I'll say. And this is the reality that Sacramento has to deal with, that Los Angeles never will have to, and you are very lucky to never have to. As long as I'm in LA, as long as I'm a free agency destination, I have the belief that I can change my fortunes overnight or over a summertime. So I would never be as panicked as I am in a Sacramento situation where things are going terribly and there is no hope to sign that one guy or those two big names that can be paired with what my team is, the one thing or two things that my team is doing right in order to turn them around. Kings don't have that luxury that the Lakers have in Los Angeles, but of course that's a summer fix. That's not a trade deadline fix. To be honest with you, I have no idea what the Lakers do, because I'm looking from an outside perspective. There's not much that the Lakers have that I would want. I'd be honest with you, looking at this roster and saying there's nothing on this Lakers roster that I think the Kings could acquire that will really help them or that they should be even remotely interested in. I know LeBron James.
We did remind you about the whole Damian Jones thing. That is inclusive of Damian Jones. I am so disappointed in Damian Jones. I was like low key excited by. He shot like 96% as a Laker in that tiny stint that he had before he went to Sacramento. But I think the West is also, like, you know, last thing before we quit here, I think the West is such an interesting and complicating factor, because the way the Lakers are playing and the way the conference is, you know, they just beat Denver, and that was with Anthony Davis sitting for all but 8 minutes of the game. They beat Milwaukee on the road trip. They, you know, should have beaten Philadelphia. I mean, I'm missing a couple things here too. They've shown they can run and play with pretty much anybody. You know, the Boston game was competitive until it wasn't. You look at the West and you see who's at, like, how do you look at the sort of the parity in this conference right now? If you're a team trying to figure out what you ought to be doing, do you see opportunity or do you see too many good teams to jump over?
I know from the Kings' perspective, I see opportunity that didn't seem realistic coming into the season. Like, this Kings team is much better now and have already reached kind of a good status now, and I didn't think they'd reach that this early in the season. We were hoping they would just reach it, period, at any point. My thought was always the ceiling of this Kings team is a sixth seed. Because of the parity of the Western Conference, the Kings get hot at the right time. The difference between the sixth seed and the fourth seed can maybe be 2-3 games, and suddenly you're putting yourself in a position to where you never even dreamed of being. Like, we thought the 99.9% Kings route to the playoffs was going to be making the play-in, and we were just hoping that it was going to be a seventh or eighth seed, so we would be guaranteed at least one play-in game, one game that doesn't count as regular season inside the Golden 1 Center. Like, that was what we were hoping for. Now, there's a very legitimate conversation happening in Sacramento of, is this team good enough and what do they need to do right now to put themselves in the best position to where the play-in isn't even their concern, that they're going right into a best of seven series. They likely lose that best of seven series, but at that point, it's still a win for the Kings. So I look at it in the sense that there's opportunity to move up and put yourself in a position if you get high or hot at the right time that you didn't expect to be in. And I think a lot of teams are going to approach the deadline with the same belief that, hey, we get this one guy, we can move up, we can make a lot of ground in the standings just by having a good final month of the season or a good 3 weeks.
Like, Andy, if you think the Lakers are close enough around the deadline, do you think they can make that argument for themselves based on what we've seen over the last month?
I think a lot of it depends on just what's AD's timeline, you know, because how much longer they will have to tread water is in a lot of ways linked to how much longer is Anthony Davis going to be shelved. You know, if around the deadline, AD is either back or pretty confidently close to being back, then maybe you can decide.
Well, the month timeline that Shams talked about or whatever, she puts him back in January. So if he's still not back in February, that's a problem.
Right. I'm just, but.
Yeah, you know, no, I agree.
January is a lot of space to operate.
Yeah.
Well, no, but it's a lot of space to operate in. And in the meantime, AD is not known for his quick healing. So it really depends on, I think in a lot of ways, just when do you think you're going to get him back? And also, as we discussed on Tuesday's podcast, what type of trade are you looking to make? Are you looking to make one that is centered in a lot of ways around this current season? Are you looking for a trade that is about this year, but it's really more about next season? You know, there's a lot of devil in those details. And then in the meantime, for the Kings, like I was looking at this, what it would mean for them to make the playoffs, period. The last time you guys were in, Matt, I know you know this, but Laker fans may not be aware, 2006, to put this in perspective, Meta World Peace, then Ron Artest, was a member of the Kings during the last season that the Kings were in the playoffs.
You want some real perspective, Andy? And this means nothing to nobody except for people who know me, but I was 12 years old.
Wow.
I was 12 years old the last time the Sacramento Kings were in the playoffs.
People don't see because he looks young. Matt is 57 years old.
I feel like I'm watching this team sometime, but not this year, man. It's they've been the fountain of youth this year, which has been nice to see.
Yeah. I can't find it. I was going to make a joke, and I can't find our old guy from Squid Game picture. Darn it! We have too many pictures now on our wheel here, Andy. Matt Georgie's the host of Locked On Kings. Great show, one of the best ones on the network. See you on all the Locked On NBA shows as well. So this is going to be a fun game. I hope, assuming everybody can play who ought to be, you know, fingers crossed, able to play, it should be fun. The atmosphere should be great. And it is definitely a sign of the times in the Western Conference that the Lakers are looking up at the Kings. Thanks so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Now hit end so I can go back to hating you Laker losers.
Well, we're going to make you wait just a second longer. Okay, now.